Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Rubber Red Sox Nation, it's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, on Fenway home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of a Red Sox Nation, it's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I fake a smile November until opening day. Suffering baseball withdrawal around the clock. When April comes, hey, meet me down on Yawkey Way. That's when Red Sox Nation starts to rock. I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Benny and the Bets podcast covering Boston Red Sox baseball. For everyone staying up late tonight on Periscope, the podcast can be found on SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, Player FM, and wherever you can find it on Google. Red Sox, as we are all aware, have won the World Series, and we kind of covered most of that in the last episode. So from here up until spring training, we will be covering all things hot stove. Tonight will specifically be Red Sox, but we will throughout the winter be talking some MLB-wide as well. I am Terry Cushman, and I am joined, as always, by Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how are you?
I'm good, Terry.
Good, good. So we're all just kind of, you know, taking in the aftermath of a World Series win and kind of trying to get an idea of where the front office will go with whatever moves they intend to make in the coming weeks. So let's start with Nathan Eovaldi, who quickly became a Red Sox postseries legend with that 97 pitch extra innings effort and some key late inning relief appearances throughout the playoffs. What are your expectations as to whether or not we will re-sign him?
Well, I think they will. I think Dombrowski will try to sign him. This is not a star-studded free agent class, across Major League Baseball for pitching. And Eovaldi, as good as he was in the postseason, is going to be a tremendous value. Obviously, he's going to perform in Boston. The city's not going to swallow him whole as it does some pitchers. So there's some value in knowing the commodity that you're going to, hopefully sign. With that said, the thing I've been wrestling with, knowing this was going to be a topic, was how much value to place on Eovaldi playoffs, his playoff performance versus what he's been and over the course of his career and what he is or was for the Red Sox because in the regular season, because he wasn't and has not been, he's not a top 10 Cy Young candidate guy. He's an above average right-handed pitcher who is an elite strike thrower with an elite fastball. And obviously he's tough as nails, which we found out, in the postseason. So, My concern, and I think I've commented on this in the past, is he going to be overpriced due to the playoff performance? Or are teams going to step back and go, okay, what's the form that we're going to get over 162 games? And also, I think the fact that he's had two Tommy John surgeries is a factor. With all that said, I'd love to see him a Red Sox for 2 years. And I'd overpay if you can get him on that term, because there's just not a lot of – if he blows out his arm, like, okay, you took a shot, you know. But it's only 2 years. I mean, we've done worse with recent contracts like Hanley and Panda and all these other terrible deals we've had, you know, Carl Crawford. And so if you could get him for 2 years and $30 million or less, I'd do it.
Yeah, and I'm basically right there with you. And I think $30 million over 2 years would be tops for his market. You look at guys like Lance Lynn, Alex Cobb, they're both post-Tommy John surgery guys. And quite frankly, they've had better careers up until this point than Nathan Eovaldi has. Eovaldi is a, you know, a career, I think, 420 or so guy, you know, in the ERA department. And so I don't think his contract will exceed theirs. You know, the sticking point, like you said, could be the number of years. And if the Red Sox stick to their guns at two, I guess I could go a third. I don't want to, but I would. It, you know, if that's what the market dictated. But 4 years, 5 years, I'm definitely not interested at that point, and I would look elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do that with his health issues. The third year is – here's how I'd structure a third year. 3 years, $45 million, so an AAV of 15 per. But then say give him a $7.5 million buyout. So it's a team option. Either you pay him the 15 or you pay him 50 cents on the dollar and he goes. Like, I'd be okay with that because you're the Red Sox and you can. Now, I understand that's, you know, with price opting in, which I'm sure is something we're going to touch on, it's go sit on the couch. Go sit on the couch. Hey, Terry, sorry about that, buddy. That's my okay. 5-year-old son just
he
surprised the absolute. He escaped and he surprised me. I guess the tricky little guy, fakes sleeping until my wife falls asleep, and then she leaves him alone, and then he like sneaks out and just surprised the hell out of me. So, look, I think Eovaldi is, 381 this year. He was a 4.16 career guy. He has a ton of value. I think the value is that, unlike, let's say, David Price until about 30 days ago, you know that he's not going to get swallowed whole by the city and the big innings that he would pitch in this ballpark. So he's got a lot of value, and I think he lengthens your starting rotation. And then the other thing is, again, expecting to be in the playoffs next year, he's your Rover guy, which, you know, in a short 5-game series, he's, you know, becomes almost invaluable in a playoff situation.
True, absolutely true. And another thing that might get lost here is we're probably going to have Chris Sale for at least 3 months, you know, he'll at least actively. David Price not going anywhere, as we will discuss. Rick Porcello, absolute horse. Erod should be solid if he can stay healthy, you know, if he doesn't get in any, you know, base running collisions or whatnot or any freak accidents. So there's your 1, 2, 3, 4, and Eovaldi would definitely slot in, you know, over, you know, the Brian Johnsons of the team anyway. So he would have a spot, but in a pinch, if we need a solid late inning reliever, we have that guy too. So that just definitely adds to the value for me. And he's a multifaceted guy that seems to be willing to do anything.
Yeah, dead on. This is we seem to agree top to bottom. The other thing, the other factor that I would consider when you're talking about what you're willing to pay him, they're announcing that Sale is not going to have surgery. I don't really know what to make of that. You know, I mean, obviously I'd like to maybe see his medical records, but we're not going to see that. Eovaldi gives you some ability to pitch, you know, in a stopper type situation because of the toughness he's shown, where you can put him in a start, you know, where you're in a mini losing streak, 3-4 games, and he can be the Curt Schilling, Pedro Sale weapon there to put an end to a losing streak and get you going right back in the right direction. You know, and look, this team's going to want to have six starters like they had this year to start the season. With the issue with Sales, I'm going to assume it's a shoulder. So, you know, I think we agree top to bottom here, and I would overpay him a little bit if it meant, you know, giving the flexibility in the rotation and knowing what he's done in this city already in a really small sample size. But I wouldn't mind overpaying for this guy, especially on a 2-year deal.
Right. And the other thing, too, with the third year before we do move on, you could do, you know, you could do vesting options for that year to kick in. So, for instance, if he pitches, say, 160, 170 innings, he averages that over the first 2 years, then the option kicks in. And, you know, we've seen similar stuff. Koji had one. I forget the details. And
I like that a lot. Yeah. I like that a lot because that keeps him, you know, he's going to – it gives you the protection of an injury, and it makes him say, okay, well, you have some concerns. I'll bet on myself and do that. And he seems like a competitor. I don't think he's going to shy away from that type of option. I think that's a really good idea as well.
Right. And all right, so another you know, key figure in the bullpen is Craig Kimbrel. And Dombrowski basically spoke with the media today, covered a multitude of issues, and said that he was open to bringing back Kimbrel. However, he does, if that doesn't work out, he says he sees Barnes and Brazier as potential ninth inning guys. So with that type of rhetoric, even though he's kind of, like he said, leaving the door open, it sounds to me like he is about ready to move on from Kimbrel, based on the Brazier-Barnes talk.
I saw the Brazier-Barnes comment as, we're going to move on from you, Craig, if you're not realistic about the money. And I honestly, that's why I thought that comment through the media was aimed at Kimbrel. I'm sure they've had talks. I'm sure the team knows what he's looking for, and I'm sure the team has told him what they're probably willing to do. And the number that, you know, there's probably a number in between, especially if it's like a 2-year deal again, because Kimbrel's got some miles at this point in his career. I'm not enamored with Kimbrel. I'm not shy about how much I'm infatuated with strike throwers out of the bullpen, and that's not Kimbrel. He's great. He's a great closer. He's been historically great at times, and he's got electric stuff, but he's put himself in some situations where he was actually one of the lone really kind of dark spots on the roster this playoff run. And I know he got the saves and he got the outs he needed, as Cora would say. He got the outs he needed, but he notoriously makes it difficult on himself. And, you know, there's someone out there saying something to the effect of, well, the grass isn't necessarily going to be greener with the next guy, because that's the highest leverage spot you can put a reliever. I get it. I got it. I know. I just think I'd rather see someone that's a little bit more of a strike thrower in that spot. Do I want him back? You know, yeah. I guess I'm going to let you hit lead off on what you think would be a good idea for him for a contract, and maybe I'll piggyback off your comment there.
Well, right now, that exact point is up for interpretation. For Kimbrel, there's two different ranges. Some people, and Rob Bradford, I think, was talking about it earlier from WEEI, thinking that he might get a record contract more than Aroldis Chapman, which would be somewhere along the lines of, say, 5 years, $90 million. You know, that would be just above where Chapman is. But I'm kind of thinking, with the way he was trending, you know, teams seem to have him figured out, and he couldn't really get a step ahead of them once they did figure him out. Like, he wasn't making adjustments, and he did not look good at all in the ALDS or the ALCS, but seemed to figure it out for the World Series. So who really knows, you know, where he's at with how effective he's going to be. But you got the Chapman range, like I just pointed out, and the lower end of that might be a Wade Davis type deal. He signed a 3-year, $57 million deal. So what's that? $18 million per year, something like that. And when Davis signed that deal, I was a little surprised it was that low in terms of number of years, but that's where it ended up. And with Kimbrel being 30 and his numbers trending the wrong way, I think that's where his market will eventually come down. But it's somewhere between Wade Davis and Chapman for sure. And I just don't know if a 3-year, close to $20 million a year is gonna get it done. You know, if the Red Sox are gonna be willing to do that.
If that's the analysis, then let's just move on to the next player, because no.
Right.
Absolutely not. No, no. Because, look, whatever move you make, you have to keep in mind that down the pike comes Bogarts, comes Betts. There's a certain segment of people listening to this podcast that may roll their eyes at this, but the team does value JBJ. We're nowhere near having to worry about Benintendi, but there's just money that's going to be earmarked for Bogarts, and especially obviously Betts. And if you're talking about $60 million over 3 years for Craig Kimbrel, I'd just rather talk about the next player, because there's just I don't need to give any more analysis. I was thinking like another deal where he's at $10 million a year. And if for 2 or 3 years, I would do that. But anything in the range of $20 million could just get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Sorry. No. Why? I mean, and here's the other thing. This team has showed a great amount of versatility, and I don't think Brazier or Barnes are going to be the day in day out answer, but. And let's not go back to the closer by committee situation, but they're going to spend some money on an arm. And I just assume figure that out, even if it's next August at the trade deadline, to solidify that. If we are good again and we are looking like we're going to make another run, then up front $60 million to Kimbrel.
Yeah. And the other thing I probably should have mentioned at the start of this is he will inevitably be given a qualifying offer. So basically what that means...
Yeah, no, I knew that.
Yeah, what that means is he can take, I think it's $17.9 million for 1 year. And if he rejects that, and I'm sure he's going to, that would, wherever he goes, Atlanta is still my anticipated spot for him, but if it's Atlanta or just another big market looking for, you know, a top closer, you know, we'll get their first round draft pick basically, and that could also limit his market, so he might only go to a team that's really not worried about it. Maybe their farm is strong enough, so they're gonna cough up that pick because they have a bunch of young controllable you know, baseball players. So
yeah, that's a factor. I think they're going to do that for a couple of reasons. One year, $17 million. I would do it if that's what it's going to take. Like I would do that, especially because this team is loaded and kind of going to be coming back as the favorite. So no problem there. And it's not the $20 million that scares me. It's the $20 million for 3 years. If we're talking 1 year and you want to just go way over the tax threshold next year and try to go back to back, look. You know, sign me up for that. I'm all in. But the second factor, and why, from what I've read, that's it's almost a you know, a guarantee that they'll do it is if someone does sign Kimbrel, then we get another pick. And this team, and we've touched on it, this team needs help in the farm system. They need arms. They need, you know, young bats. They top to bottom, it's not a great system. So adding a first-round pick is just clearly another – or the chance to is another reason to issue that qualifying offer.
Right. Yeah, and I fully expect them to do that. I'm actually, as we speak, I've been kind of trying to find confirmation of when is Ryan Brazier a free agent, and SportTrack has him basically a free agent right now. BaseballReference.com, which I use a lot specifically for looking at contract details, lists him as controllable through 2023, I believe. Or no, that's when he is a free agent, is 2023. And he won't be arbitration eligible until 2020. And as I've been looking through my media feeds, there's all kinds of talk about Ryan Brazier pitching in the late innings for the Red Sox, and none of the writers seem to be mentioning anything about free agency. So I'm going to go with baseballreference.com here and assume that their info is correct.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. I've read the same pages you've read, and my thought was he was signed from an international system, which would make him, you know, basically a free agent. So I'm not exactly sure why Dombrowski would say he's considering Barnes and or Brazier in that role if he didn't have Brazier under control. It would make no sense, because he would basically be bolstering Brazier's leverage at negotiations for no reason, like, you know, because then you're like, if he is a free agent, then he could be asking closer money where he wouldn't be otherwise. So it just doesn't make sense. And I don't know why the information isn't readily available, because baseball is the absolute best sport with giving you all the facts and circumstances necessary to understand the roster and the options and the contracts and all this stuff. But Brazier's like in the Bermuda Triangle of baseball factoids here. I can't find it at all.
Yeah, he's just still just a tiny speck on the map for having played such a critical role in the World Series. But that's fine. I'm sure we'll have it figured out quickly enough. Another guy of intrigue that is also a free agent is Joe Kelly. How would you like to see the team approach or not approach him?
He's got to be approached. He's a power arm. He's a strikeout guy. And he became an elite strike thrower in the playoffs. And if that's the version you get, I mean, he could be your closer. The problem is he goes into like month-long, half-season-long droughts where he just doesn't throw strikes, and he literally loses you games. So he's an interesting case, and his value becomes more difficult because of his inconsistency. And it's never tied to an injury that I've known. He just doesn't. He just completely loses it for extended periods of time. But he showed that he was just such a weapon. And then this playoff run, he again, like Eovaldi, what are you paying for? Are you paying for the Kelly that just dominated three rounds of the playoffs? Or are you paying for the Kelly that really pitched himself out of the bullpen rotation from basically mid-July until the end of the season? And I think that's a significant factor. Bullpen guys typically don't get long-term deals. Like, you know, Miller with Cleveland got 3. That's pretty unusual for a non-closer. I would say if you could get Kelly for 2 and 10, that's something that would entice me. I think that's, you know, non-closer relievers are typically somewhere between like 1 and 3.5 million. So I think that's the high end for a non-closer, but I think he's worth it because when he's good, he's really good. He's really versatile. He can pitch in the fifth, sixth, seventh, or eighth. So, but your thoughts, Terry?
Yeah, his market will probably be a little higher than that. A good comp, I feel like, might be Addison Reed, who pitched the second half of the 2017 season with us. And I think he got something like a two-year $16 million deal, which didn't work out very well, by the way, from the Twins. But so that was eight per year. I feel like that's probably about his value, maybe a third year where he's 30. I don't know. But that's the tough thing is how do other teams look at him? Because if they look at him as a closer, closer money would be at least $10 million, you know, per year. And that's the low end of closer money. I mean, we're seeing guys get closer to 20, but even if it came out to be 3 years, $30 million, that's too much. And I don't think the Red Sox are going to go there. So it just depends on, you know, like I said, what other teams, you know, view him as. And the way I look at it is similar to how you looked at it. He's been in the major leagues for parts of six seasons now. And if he was going to be a closer or even an everyday eighth inning guy, he would have been able to establish himself that, you know, as that by now. And, you know, coming through the month of September, it was questionable as to whether or not he would be on the postseason roster at all. And most of us kind of figured he would because our bullpen was just so bad that we were simply going to have to put him on it. And he ended up on it. And the month of October came around and it's like he flipped a switch and he was probably, I don't, was he the best in our bullpen? He might have been. I mean, Kimbrel certainly wasn't. And
well, besides probably the Rover position.
Yeah.
Because that was pretty dominant. I thought he was definitely our most Brazier. Him and Brazier were really solidifying forces with Barnes next and then Kimbrel a distant fourth. So just to touch quickly on a couple of your comments on Kelly, Addison Reed to me is actually a good scare tactic for teams that are thinking about 3 years and that type of money. Addison Reed stinks. He had one good year, I think, with the Mets, and he was labeled as the eighth inning guy. This team really hasn't had a clear-cut eighth inning guy, and certainly didn't this year, and it worked out just fine. He's just not going to get – I think that he's not to put a button on the Addison Reed was wildly overpriced, and he did not pitch well in Boston, and I was shocked that he got that money afterwards. It's a sign to me that should hopefully scare some teams away because Addison Reed doesn't throw as hard, but he was a fastball slider guy just like Kelly is. But he had notoriously pitched later on in late inning situations where Kelly doesn't have that history. Moving on to his value based on, you know, whether you see him as a playoff performer, or a regular season performer. The other factor is if a team jumps in and offers him to get back in the starting rotation. When he was with the Cardinals, he started a game in the World Series with the Cardinals against the Red Sox, I think. I don't think that's a factor. I think he's comfortable in the bullpen. I haven't heard any of those rumblings. You know, we consistently heard them with Papelbon, where he always hinted like he wanted to go back be a starter. Starter money would be enticing to Kelly. Assuming we don't hear that, he is a power arm, and I do think there's going to be a market for him in Major League Baseball. I wonder if there's a possibility that the closeness of this clubhouse and the ability to know you're going to pitch in a city that's going to care about your team, you're going to win, you have a chance to repeat, may bring a guy like Kelly back if the Red Sox are competitive but maybe not the highest bidder. I don't know if you have some thoughts on that, Terry.
Yeah, I mean, he might take a slight discount to stay here. But like I said, it just all comes down to how other teams see him. I definitely do not see him as a closer. Ideally, his most optimal numbers will come as a situational late inning reliever, whether it's the sixth, seventh, eighth inning, and hopefully not on back-to-back days. He does have better numbers when he's not brought in, you know, multiple days in a row. And I just think that's where his value is. That's where his, that's how he will generate his best numbers. And if nobody, you know, backs up the Brinks truck for him, I think the Red Sox stand a great chance to re-sign him. And I hope it happens. I hope it happens. I've been somewhat of a Kelly apologist, and he, you know, he kind of fell off the cliff a little bit in early July, and I really thought he would figure it out before the playoffs. But I would definitely do whatever we could to keep him, because, like you have been alluding to, Boston is a tough city to pitch in, and he's proven that he can do it.
You know, it's funny. I may not have said that, but for the playoff run, because this regular season he completely was a non-factor to the point where he was really legitimately jeopardizing leads, losing games. I was at a game he lost the mid-August start David Price had against the Astros at home, where he just didn't throw strikes. It's amazing how a playoff run can change the valuation of an athlete, and I think there's no better circumstances to dictate that example other than this, you know, other Evaldi and maybe to a greater extent Kelly. With that said, I think you're right. I obviously he embraced the big moment even despite the poor regular season, and I do want him back, and not for nostalgic purposes. I'm not a nostalgic guy when it comes to the players on the team, because I really truly root for the team, not necessarily just the players. So I just think the difference between Evaldi and Kelly is Kelly's had zero track record of injury, so you may see a team willing to go to a rare 3rd or 4 years on the term for a contract for a reliever. I just don't think you're going to see that with Evaldi, especially with a mid-market, small-market team. No one wants to be cash-strapped with a guy who just blew out his arm. So Kelly, no history of injury whatsoever, has actually been tremendously durable. Maybe you get to the realm of a fourth year where the Red Sox just aren't going to do it.
Yeah, I don't – the only reliever on the market that, you know, might reach 4 years, I think, is Kimbrel. Or maybe Zach Britton, actually. He'll be on the market as well. But hopefully it happens. Another thing that happened of note today is the Red Sox cut ties with Carson Smith, who controversially threw out his shoulder and then proceeded to throw the manager under the bus, and which probably
wrongly, by the way, without any reason to do so, completely inaccurate. You know, bye, Carson. You stink. Bye. You have no value. What was the trade? Who did we give up to get him again, Terry, if you recall?
Yeah, that was Wade Miley and a prospect that didn't even matter.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a net negative effect there. I mean, Wade Miley was pretty good for the Brewers. He would not have been on this team. So, it makes it sting a little bit less because you did trade an asset there. Wade Miley was never going to be a long-term fix for this club. But, you know, I was in the car. I remember where I was when I heard that, and I remarked about how unimportant it was to me. He stunk. The way he tried to blame anyone but himself for his second significant injury while being a Boston Red Sox just almost made me chuckle at how pathetic he is. So Carson Smith, bye.
Yeah. I won't miss him. But
the other guy I won't miss is Drew Pomeranz. That guy And I don't understand. He had a half season here a year ago where he was like, you know, they Nesson, it's almost like the Red Sox were making them do it, put up like that stat where he was like 26 quality starts in a row or some thing. I can't remember the specific stat. I just remember rolling my eyes at it. That guy sucks. He's just not a competitor. I can't wait to not see him pitch next year. The fact that he was on the World Series roster was shocking. We commented about how laughable it was that they waited till the 19th inning to get him hot in game three of the World Series. And I don't know what his money is, but I think it's enough that it's going to free up a little bit of flexibility. Maybe that'll help with a guy like Joe Kelly. I'm not sure, but you know, there's another guy that I just can't wait to never see again.
Yeah, I think it is a little bit of money. I think it's like $8.5 million or something. So, so that'll come off.
It is $8.5 million. You're right, and he's an unrestricted free agent. They would never risk. By the way, you're talking about qualifying offers. The safest bet in the history of betting would be that the Red Sox are going to have nothing to do with this guy.
Yeah.
So no qualifying offer. Bye, Drew. Bye.
I'm positive of that as well. You know, they won't bring him back, but I didn't hate him, but with that being said, throughout much of the season, I didn't have any confidence in him either. He was one of those guys who kind of, up until probably 2015 or maybe even the start of the 2016 season, bounced around from team to team in the rotation, in the bullpen, and it just seemed like he'd go on a run, you know, as a starter, but then his arm would crap out, and I don't think he ever should have transitioned into a starting pitcher, even though 2017 he did put up some decent numbers, and you know, for 2016 as well. His arm was kind of tired by the time we got him, and of course the Padres kind of covered up some medical stuff. He had some stem cell injections, and that wasn't a great situation, but you know, it's just unfortunate it didn't work out, I guess, in hindsight.
The writing was on the wall. So he's been with – he was drafted by the Indians. He's been in the Rockies organization. He pitched with the Athletics. He made an all-star game with San Diego in 16, and then we traded for him. And as you alluded to, some of that – there was some funny business with the medical records. And we actually had not – the commissioner's office gave the Red Sox the opportunity to rescind the trade, and the Red Sox rejected that opportunity. So the problem with Pomerantz is always that he was not even an average strike thrower. I would consider him a below average strike thrower. And unlike Kelly, who is also typically a below average strike thrower, he does not have a plus fastball. You know, his fastball is like 87, 89. And they always blame like health and everything else. There's always some goddamn thing with him. The other thing is they touted him as some versatile, you know, reliever, starter guy, and the Red Sox always wanted him to be a starter, but always said he could pitch in relief, and maybe they did envision him at some point in that, you know, ability to pitch in the Rover, but he stinks. His stuff's not good enough. He doesn't throw enough strikes. He's not a competitor. And for the people that are surprised by the way his tenure with the Red Sox ended, I would be surprised why you're surprised, because he just, to me, never showed any facet of being a professional athlete, a professional pitcher. None of the facets of his game were elite or even above average in my mind, except for maybe his curveball.
Yeah, well, that's what it was his knuckle curve is what most of his arsenal was predicated on. And so if he couldn't throw that, like he couldn't.
Well, he could never throw it for a strike.
Right.
Smart professional hitters just laid off it, watch it bounce at 58 feet, and then they moved and waited for the fastball.
Yeah. We'll get into David Price now. Not a shocker, obviously. He has opted in, and will in all likelihood be here for another 4 years. So, plus side to that is he finally did win in the postseason. He's coming off of a good regular season anyway. No reason why he shouldn't do the same this coming year. And seems to be adapting to, throwing at a little bit lower velocity. You know, his fastball average is, 92, 93 now. And, that's good to see because some power arms never figured that out. So he's kind of transitioning pretty well. And that's the good news. The bad news is there's always potential for drama. And both of us don't digest that very well, I guess. And he could easily create a toxic clubhouse if other circumstances, kind of fell, the right way. So, I don't know. So I'm not crazy about him, but, we're stuck with him nonetheless.
Terry, he holds all the cards now.
He does.
And I've been told that's a pretty good feeling.
Yeah.
And one of those cards is a surprise ability late in the season to throw the changeup as a plus pitch for him. And that is coincided with the dip in velocity. I don't look at David any different because he's not throwing 96 anymore. He showed in the playoffs that he has that club in his bag. It's something he doesn't want to use unless he has to. So we know it's still there. It's just never going to be there for 100 pitches. I would much rather 92 with a change, the breaking pitch and the cutter, than some elite fastball that, he can flash and get you a strikeout. But I think over the course of the length of a four-term deal, because we have him for 4 years. So we, first of all, any Red Sox fan is going to say, well, we want him healthy. And I think with that, I'm happy with 92, 93, especially if he can locate it. And then that changeup that he featured late in the playoffs, I think he threw it 23% of the time. It might have been 23 pitches or 23% of the time or whatever the stat was. It's no surprise that Pedro was as good as he was as long as he was because he had that elite circle changeup. The year he hurt his shoulder in the All-Star game in 1999, he relied heavily on that changeup, and he was still an elite pitcher with it. And I think David can learn from that. Maybe he's talked to Pedro. I don't know. Obviously, Pedro stays, involved in the organization. So, now with that said, I'm everything about David Price I watch with one eye and one, through just like a hairy eyeball situation. But we need him. He had to be here. Even at the money, I know, the money makes some people sick, but he has to be here for this team to be good. And Kelly, we've talked about it with Kelly. We've talked about it with Evaldi, where on October 1st, we felt certain ways about certain guys on this team. And then the playoffs changed that perspective. And I think that's no more true than it is with David Price. So, look, we've talked about it extensively, Terry. Neither of us are huge David Price guys, but at the end of the day, he does make your team better. And he had to be here for, in my opinion, for this team to have a legitimate chance to win again next year.
Fair enough. There's no real way to replace him. Obviously, there's no one on the market, and we're not really in a position to, land a huge contract, especially if we're trying to maybe restructure the deal for Martinez and or extend Mookie if his people are even willing to come to the table, which they have not been the last couple years. So, we got Price. He's pitching like an ace, so fair enough for now. Another guy, though, we kind of touched on him in the intro, is Chris Sale. He's been like the most mysterious case of anybody. I mean, you go back to July and we're like, oh, it's just a phantom injury. They're just trying to slow him down a little bit to put him on pace for a strong October, and then he comes back, but then goes right back on the DL, and then, you know, things started to get a little hairy in early September. You know, the Yankees kind of closed in on us. They had it down to something like 5.5, 6.5 games. So they start to ramp up Chris Sale, you know, in preparation for maybe, you know, a second half of September run to kind of preserve the lead. But then the Red Sox, you know, kind of cruise away again from the Yankees, and they just kind of started easing him in little by little. I think it was like 40 pitches was the count for the first one. He was an opener. Then they upped it to 65, and then his next two starts were basically, you know, normal pitch counts, but he didn't look good, you know, and throughout the playoffs, he kept us in games. He was effective that way. His off-speed stuff, he could throw that stuff for strikes, could not throw his fastball for strikes. So, and it comes out today that they didn't say, if you read the tweet, they didn't say he definitely wasn't having surgery, but they said most likely not having it. So it's still kind of open to interpretation, and I don't want him to have surgery, but I want to know that they know what the deal is, and I don't think anybody knows that right now. So that just kind of, to me, puts him in limbo. And even if they say all the right things and he has a good spring training, how many months is he going to give us in the regular season?
Yeah, it's a good question. And they did pick up his option, but he's an unrestricted free agent. So he'll be 30 this upcoming year. So at 31, he'll be an unrestricted free agent. And he has not made the sort of money that typical elite guys have made. I mean, he's probably worth over $25 million, but David Price is worth $250 million. So he just hasn't had that chance to get to free agency yet. I think he's going to do everything he can to be elite this year, to stay healthy. And, you know, there is that phenomenon where unrestricted free agents seemingly have their career years right before they become those, you know, completely free to sign at any dollar they want with any club they want. You know, the Red Sox may try to take advantage of the iffy health situation and try to give him some financial some financial well-being, but it's not going to be huge money. You know, they may say, look, you're going to pitch 2019 at $15 million, and we're going to pay you another $22 million for 3 years. And they're going to roll the dice that they can keep him healthy for 4 more years through his year 34 season. They're going to try to save money, you know, because he's a $30 million. If there was no health concerns, he's a 5-year, $30 million a year guy. So maybe you get him for 22 or 25 or some discounted rate for 3 years so that he has the financial certainty going into a season where he's obviously had back-to-back years with some injury situation. So I would be surprised if we didn't hear some grumblings here in the next month or two where they do try to extend him with the unknown of his health. But if he gambles on himself, I think that's going to tell you a couple things. One, he doesn't really consider the health issues to be a concerning thing. And two, he expects to go into 2019 and completely dominate.
That is, I'm sure, what he believes he will do, but I don't know. I mean, I just kind of went through some of the red flags and anomalies of the second half of last season, but they did start him game one every series. So, I mean, that kind of tells you that there shouldn't be anything major going on in there. But if it is fatigue, then it's clearly because he does not have the frame to get through
a full season. But how could it be fatigue? He didn't pitch. He pitched less than a long reliever would.
I don't know. Nothing makes sense.
I know. I think that's the point, though, too, is It's frustrating because we don't know what it is. Obviously, if he's not having surgery, that means it's not like a torn or frayed labrum. That means the rotator cuff's not completely gone. You know, Pedro dealt with the frayed rotator cuff for like half a decade, never had surgery on it that I can recall. You know, and didn't have velocity at the end of his career, but he was still getting people out at a relatively good clip. So I don't know, man. I don't know. And I think the Red Sox know what is going on. And like I said, I do expect them to use the leverage to maybe try to extend him at reasonable dollars, considering he's, you know, probably the second best left-handed or third best left-handed pitcher in baseball.
I'll just say it right now. I'm just not interested in him. I mean, I think it would be a bad contract. And we're sitting here right now with Dustin Pedroia, who's not making, you know, top dollar by any means. I think he's averaging $14 million per season. But we're looking at the real possibility that he might not play again, you know, in – that's three seasons that got wasted. So I just don't want to go there. And there's another guy on the market, same exact time Chris Sale is, Madison Bumgarner. Maybe that's where we go. That's a guy I would lock up for 5 or 6 years.
Well, I don't disagree with you. I mean, I'd probably prefer him over Sale, especially because, but for the ATV incident or whatever happened to Bumgarner, he really hasn't had any issue with health. There's some options in there if you're willing to spend some team assets. You may have to wait a year or two for Snell, but Snell seems to be the next stud left-handed guy. I think he's got too many team-friendly seasons left on his rookie deal for the Rays to consider moving him now, but a year or two from now, that'll change. So there are going to be some options. It just isn't going to be this year, and it doesn't have to be this year because they picked up his option and he's coming back.
Right, and I was fine with that, obviously, because there's no immediate solution in terms of replacing him. So,
and to get to the heart of your point, because we've talked about this, you and I both agree, 5 or 6 years is a no for both of us. So my question to you, because my answer is yes. Hypothetically, they sign him this offseason, and they say, we're going to sign you from 2020 for 3 years at $66 million. Would you do it?
I probably wouldn't.
Yeah, see, I disagree with that. Yeah. I think you take the risk. Because he's that elite.
Yeah, I mean, if maybe the difference is he needs to throw more off speed or whatever, he might have to revamp his pitching arsenal to accommodate his health or whatever, and maybe that's the solution. But I would just be really uncomfortable with it. And right now, I get that I'm probably in the extreme minority of guys who would say no to that deal. But come next July or August, if he's on the DL, I might still be in the minority, but it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a much bigger crowd in there with me.
So what you're admitting is the team would do it. Maybe. Yeah, as a side note, I'm sorry?
Oh, well, maybe. I don't know. I mean, we don't know what they know right now. So,
yeah, that's true. That's true. But they knew enough to pick up his option at $15 million. So, but hey, and I know you know this, but for the listener, Bumgarner is an unrestricted free agent after this season. So right. That is a factor. That will absolutely be a factor because you know the Red Sox will be in on Madison Bumgarner.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, he lines up perfectly with Sale's, you know, free agency. So I would do that. And that, you know, that San Francisco team is just a dumpster fire of an organization. They should have blew it up last year, but instead they're trading for these old-ass players, you know, Longoria, who I think was 33 at the time, and they brought...
Did you see they picked up Sandoval's option?
They did. It's going to be dirt cheap, but I mean, like, why? You know? I don't know. And they're looking for a GM right now. I thought Bochy would be done after last year, but obviously not, because that would have happened by now. So, that wouldn't be a team I would really want to play for at this point, because they just have a lot of issues in the front office that seem to be.
Well, here's the other thing too. If Sale is not himself, and the Giants are going to be what we think they are, which is absolutely a dumpster fire, he's going to be a guy you can get for a prospect or two in July to solidify your rotation moving forward. It doesn't seem like he showed any, and I'm looking and I'm not seeing any, you know, willingness to sign with the Giants, or I want to sign with the Giants, or they're having talks. So unless there's something we don't know, he's another guy where, maybe Sale is not healthy, that they don't even wait. Like, they go out and get him at the trade deadline next year.
Well, I mean, it depends on the cost, because, I mean, if you can, you know, if you can get him for zero prospects and just money months later, I mean, that's the route I would probably be inclined to take. But I guess it just depends on the market for, you know, prospects.
And just the numbers on Sandoval, because I think it makes me kind of nauseous. The option the Giants picked up was for $555,000.
Right.
That's because on the final year of his deal with the Red Sox, the Red Sox will be paying for a guy who will be playing in San Francisco $17 million. Right. That is sickening.
Yeah, and that's how it works. If he is released by the Red Sox, then he's only allowed to make the major league minimum with the next team. So that's where the $500,000 comes from. But
No, I get it. I just wanted to point out how much it disturbed me that we. But hey, look, Hanley comes off the books, so we get that money back to put into another spot. And then next year, in the all-important, I think Bogaerts is first, if I'm not mistaken, next year. We get $17 million off the books to put towards Bogaerts, Sale, Bumgarner, you know, whoever it may be. So the timing seems to be okay, you know, where next year's team is mostly coming back.
Right. Porcello also will be a free agent next year.
That's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I'd basically give him the same deal he signed, you know, in 2015, where that was a 4-year, $80 million deal. So 20 a year, I mean, that's a sustainable contract. And I know he's not really the Cy Young guy that he was, but he's going to go at least 200 innings. He's not going on the DL. And that would be fine for me.
He's going into his year 30, so he'll be 30 next year.
Yeah,
I agree wholeheartedly, I'd offer it to him now. I wouldn't wait. Just re-up him. You know, he'll wind up with, if it's something that he's okay with, it'll be 8 years, $160 million from the Red Sox. Yeah. But pitchers are overpriced. I mean, that's what it is. You got to pay about $1.5 million per win. And, you know, and if that's the formula, then that's what Porcello's worth.
Yeah. And, yeah, no, I would do it. And with his type of stuff, I mean, he should be a guy that could easily pitch effectively until, you know, age 35, 36, because he's never been a power guy. So, you know, his arm should be pretty healthy because of that.
And actually, that reminds me of one thing I wanted to say about Sale. The problem with Sale is for him to change some of the things that are causing his problems, he'd have to reinvent himself. This isn't Price where he just develops a changeup. Like, using Rick as an example, Rick Porcello is so fundamentally sound with his delivery, his motion in his delivery, and he finishes a lot like Greg Maddux used to, which was balanced on 2 feet, ready to play, field his position. That is not Chris Sale. His plant foot is basically in the middle of the left-hand batter's box, and then he whips his body around that plant leg to then get his shoulder square to the plate to throw the ball accurately. And it's amazing that he has the command he has doing that. But that is a big part of why I think there's been an added stress on his arm, and now he's going to be 30 next year. And so my concern is, if you get him to stride from the rubber to the plate directly, is his stuff going to be the same? And the answer to that is probably a no. But either way, even if it's something you're going to attempt, you're asking a guy who wouldn't wear a retro jersey without slicing them up so he wouldn't have to completely reinvent himself. And Terry, maybe you disagree with this. I don't think you will. I don't see that as a possibility. And that's one of the reasons why I'd only be willing to go 3 years on a guy like that, because I'll bet you a buck that he will not in his year, in his 35 season.
Yeah, and you could be exactly right. But I do think he's smart though, and can, you know, figure that stuff out. So,
well, that, you know, and he, look, it'd be silly for me not to mention that he has a plus slider, and if he is healthy enough to throw that slider, he's gonna have some level of effect on a lineup at least 2.5 times through. So.
Right, absolutely. Let's see. Nunez opted in today. That's a pretty affordable $4 million contract. So
he'll be your starting second baseman opening day next year, because Pedroia is not going to be ready. He may never be ready.
Yeah, but the talk is that, you know, if he's healthy enough, he's going to hit leadoff opening day only. So. I think he could. I mean, that's reasonable that he can kind of bullshit his way through spring training in order to get to that moment, because he did wiggle his way into the lineup this year. So,
well, Pedroia is not going to be ready. They've already admitted that, and there's no chance they're going to re-sign Kinsler. And Holt, it has to be over 162 games. Your super utility guy, because he's just so valuable. He hits in all different types of roles. So I think he'll be your super utility guy. And if Pedroia comes back, then Pedroia becomes your second baseman, mostly because you're paying him $15 million. But if he doesn't, then it becomes a situation where, despite his bad defense, he's going to be your second baseman. He'll probably be your second baseman until the All-Star break, where they probably will have to make another move for another second baseman that can play some defense. So he'll be back. He's at an affordable number, like you said, so not terrible, but you can agree with me that Kinsler's gone, right?
Oh, he's definitely gone. And actually, I was just reading something shortly before we came on. Michael Chavis will be taking grounders and getting some work in at second base over the winter, and then of course they'll have a lot of spring training to develop that further. But he is already viewed basically as a major league level hitter, as he currently is. So it's just how quickly can they get him defensively at the major league level. So I think you could conceivably see him in the Red Sox lineup as early as probably mid-May.
Don't disagree with that. I just think when he comes up, it's going to be an everyday player. They're not going to fuck around with that type of prospect. So you're going to see the way they handled Benintendi, where they just plugged him in, and he becomes an everyday guy. He will not come up to platoon. I think he's a right-handed hitter, Terry.
You know, I'm not positive.
He is. I'm looking at Baseball Reference. He's a right-handed stick. Okay. So. You're not going to see a platoon with a guy like Nunez. So if he becomes your second baseman, and he hasn't played that spot yet, so that'd be interesting. But, you know, he's the type of prospect you put in, and you hope he's there for 10 years.
Yeah, and he could be. You know, I've been really disappointed that they haven't given Sam Travis a chance to, you know, hold down, an everyday spot. And he's been successful at every level, and shown flashes of it, you know, in the limited time he's had with the Red Sox, but for whatever reason, they just don't commit to him. And I expect, like yourself, that Chavis will be looked at a lot differently and be given a bigger opportunity. One thing, though, to possibly consider here is, does Devers stay at third base, or do they convert him into a first baseman?
It's a good question. He's not going to be a first baseman this year because you have Moreland. So my answer to your question is I'm going to put off the answer for a year. But if he does not make – he had 24 errors this year, and he had two stints on the disabled list. So he's like a 30-35 error guy over a full slate. Yeah, that's a significant issue. So it's certainly something that's going to get looked at. But because it's not an issue they're going to make this year, I want to get back to Sam Travis. And a guy we have not talked about who happened to win the MVP, and I don't know if you've heard, but he's going to Macy's to sign autographs, although he will not sign personalized memorabilia, so for whatever that's worth. But I think Pierce is going to go to the highest bidder, and obviously he's coming off where maybe his value's never been higher despite the fact that he's 35 years old, and I just don't blame guys that are going to go get the max money at the end of their career. So if somebody throws 2 years and $20 million, he'll go play for, you know, whoever. But if he's going to come back on Moreland money or less, which is probably what it would have taken before the playoff run, I'd like to see him back. I think he plays an underrated first base, and he crushes left-handed pitching. I mean, he's an absolute, you know, in my FanDuel lineups, if it's a left-handed starter, he's always the MVP. I mean, he just crushes left-handed pitching, and I'd love to see him back. If he's not, Sam Travis becomes the platoon guy, I think, at first base. I know he's played some left too, so he gives you a little bit of flexibility. I don't think they have any desire to put him in the outfield, but I think he will be somebody that could jump into that right-handed bat to complement Moreland. And regardless, though, for next year, I think it's got to be Devers at third.
Yeah, and it most likely will. I would like to see them eventually move him across the diamond. And another concern I have is just health. I mean, he's a pudgy guy. Typically, you know, they're not the most graceful when it comes to moving around. They could get injury prone, and he did get dinged up a little bit this year. So I'm kind of hoping the long-term plan for him will be first base. And the other thing to consider too, and not so much for Devers, but maybe for Chavis, maybe for Sam Travis, maybe even Bobby Dalbec, who won't be up too early in the season, but he was at AA for a while this year, and it wouldn't shock me at all if he's a July or August addition to this roster. There's a lot of ways where Nunez and possibly Moreland could simply be released. I mean, they're on short money, and if these young kids are outperforming them and making it difficult to justify keeping Nunez and Moreland around, those are the easiest guys to cut loose to make that happen. So I'm not convinced that even though they'll be on the opening day roster, they won't necessarily be here in September, and hopefully, you know, if we make it to October.
That's an interesting thought. I don't think you'd have to release those guys if healthy. I think there'd be a trade market where you could maybe flip a guy like Nunez for a reliever. I think Moreland has a little bit more value. He's been a very consistent major league player. He's won a gold glove. That's a guy where if you do feel like you have the answer at first base moving forward, you know, maybe you use that piece to fill some other role, and I would envision that maybe bullpen help. But it's not lost on me. I mean, if you know, I'm not real high on Sam Travis. I don't know. I've seen enough from him where I'm just not necessarily excited about him. He hasn't had enough consistent major league bats that I'm sorry, at-bats, that you know, the sample size is big enough to make a determination one way or the other. He just doesn't impress me. I don't necessarily love his approach to the plate. He's not overly athletic. He's not a plus defender. So I get it. He's obviously he would probably be on a big league club and maybe like 18 other teams, but he doesn't seem to me to be the answer moving forward anywhere in the nine spot. So, you know, and then the other guy that we haven't really talked about is, you know, they carried three catchers all the way through the playoffs. I mean, what the hell are they going to do with Swihart? You know, or, you know, I can't imagine they're going to go through another season like that. I think maybe they use one of those assets also to fill a role. So something to think about.
Yeah, I saw something from someone today, one of the beat writers, and it looks like possibly Sandy Leone might be the odd man out, and Swihart's just going to get more time catching, and they could always obviously plug him in to the field somewhere.
We've had that conversation, and that's the way I felt for a really long time. I mean, you may piss off a guy like Chris Sale, who, you know, Sandy Leone is his, you know, basically his binky. But he just offers nothing offensively, and he is good defensively, and obviously the guys like him. But Swihart's a, I would say, an elite athlete in the catcher spot. Gives you some things that just most current, you know, post the heavy steroid era, catchers just aren't that athletic. They don't run that well. And again, he's another guy who has not had consistent major league at-bats where you know what he's going to ultimately be. I don't think he's going to be a great hitter, but I think he is going to give you certainly more than a guy like Leone. By the way, he was so bad in what game did he come in the World Series? I think it was game four where he just couldn't catch. I think it was Kimbrel. He literally couldn't catch the ball. That was so odd to see in a Major League Baseball game, let alone a World Series. So just a little anecdote there.
That's Swihart you're talking about?
Yeah. I mean, he did. Huh. He just and he kept like seemingly saying, I'm being crossed up, but I don't think he was. I think he just like wasn't catching the ball. So I don't know, man. And they say he's really good, and the team is obviously very high on him because to a certain extent they chose Swihart over Hanley. You know, I don't know what's going to happen with the catcher's position. I think it limits the versatility of your roster by having three catchers, and it's not something I would do.
Yeah, and I don't expect that they will, to be honest with you. So, you know, so who knows? I mean, they have basically till the end of spring training to figure that out, and you know, injuries could happen or whatever that could dictate how you know, they take a certain path. So
Terry, what's your position on Pierce though? You still haven't really given up.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. I don't think they're going to bring him back, and that sounds crazy to think that they won't bring back their World Series MVP, but there's just so many cheaper options that look like they're going to be available, and then you have Nunez, you have Holt. It's just there's a hell of a logjam right now throughout the infield, and I think somebody's going to give him a decent amount of money. He made $6 million this year, so even if he's given that for, you know, another 2 years or whatever, that's, you know, that's probably something the Red Sox are not going to do. They're probably not going to go more than a year, and I just think some other team's going to swoop in and sign him, and I think he knows. I mean, this is the sixth or seventh team at least that he's been on, maybe even his eighth or ninth. I don't even know. But he's been with a lot of teams, every team in the AL East, and I think he understands the situation. So I just find it a long shot.
He made $6.25 million each of the last two seasons.
Right.
But he is a borderline elite hitter against left-handed starting pitching. You know, he's got a mid-9 OPS, not something to scoff at, especially when the Red Sox really historically have struggled against left-handed pitching. he just crushes left-handed pitching, and he's not going to get beat by, seemingly, regardless of whether they're a mixing breaking pitches type of guy or just an elite, you know, plus-plus fastball, he never seems overmatched by a left-handed pitcher. And with Moreland having some durability issues, and he's the type of guy to go in a prolonged slump, I think you're definitely going to need a right-hand bat to complement first base. And to me, he seems like a great option. The problem is he's 35 years old and may be a little bit overvalued because of the MVP in the World Series.
True. And if Nunez didn't opt in today, then it becomes a much easier path as well. And maybe here, this would be an absolute long shot as well, but maybe what if the Red Sox decide to just trade Moreland, and then that frees up, you know, a spot for Pierce? I mean, I wouldn't be shocked, especially given the durability, but I don't think that will happen.
I don't either, because I think they like Moreland. I like Moreland. I mean, he made an all-star team this year, and I don't need everyone to be a superstar. And Moreland seems to be a really consistent player, major league player, great defensive player. And he's a pretty good left-handed hitter. You know, he's not an elite guy by any means, but I think he's, you know, he's a mid 800 OPS guy. And I think he has too much value to, I'm actually wrong. In 2018, he was a 7.58, so slightly above average. But, you know, the money's realistic, and I think the Red Sox like him, and I just don't see him going anywhere. So I would say, to me, the answer at first base would be a complement right-handed hitter, and obviously Pierce is perfect in that role. Again, I just harken back to the fact that if he can get 2 years, $16 million, or 2 years, $20 million, or some ridiculous last contract, and he's going to be 36 next season. And I don't blame him. Like, I'm all about athletes getting paid when they can. So, but I'd love to have Pierce back at money that makes sense.
Yeah,
2 years, $12 million. I'd do 2 years, $12 million.
I'd do
1 year, $8 million. You know, I think I'd overpay a little bit for just the flexibility of having him for one more year.
Yeah. I just think there's just too big of a log jam, but I like him, and if they find a way to do it, you're not going to see me complaining for sure. It's just, I just don't see how it fits, that's all. All right, well, you know what? I think that's good enough for this episode. More stuff might come out in the next few days, so maybe early next week we'll come on here and go through all of the new information. But
yeah, I mean, look, as a last little point, we didn't talk about any of the outfield spots. We didn't talk about shortstop. We have answers at third, second, and first already on the roster. We have almost too much help at catcher. There's not a lot of issues with the starting rotation. Everyone's coming back. You know, so, I mean, we can talk about – we're talking about ancillary pieces here, Terry. We're not talking about major pieces. So it's encouraging that they'll be back. Hopefully they'll make some moves and be ready to try to maybe even repeat next year. I think they're definitely going to have a chance at it. I it's so hard, I don't think they will, but it's exciting that maybe we won't have such a letdown after winning the World Series. So, but hey, thanks for having me on tonight.
Yeah, have a good night, bud.
You too.
All right, episode 98. We are nearing number 100, and that could be, you know, late next week for all I know, but we'll see what happens, see if any quick signings happen. We talked about Evaldi. He wants to come back. He has said that. I'd be shocked if Joe Kelly wasn't kind of in the same boat. He wants to come back, so we'll see if they can make quick work out of a contract, but and that might be the case with Kelly, but with Evaldi, he's got a much more interesting market, so could be several days and or weeks before we see how that plays out. So, but nonetheless, we'll keep an eye on things. It's an interesting time of year. Also, we only covered Red Sox, but Manny Machado is on the market, arguably the top free agent. Bryce Harper right up there with him, and plenty to monitor outside of the Red Sox as well. So everyone have a good rest of your evening, good morning, good afternoon, whenever you listen. And we'll talk to you next week.
Family, wherever I roam, a Fenway home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I sleepwalk through the day.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.